Burned. I'm one of your hosts, Amanda Konkin.
And I am your other host, Michael Cohen.
And happy 2013. Welcome back, everybody. We hope you had a great break and found some television to, you know, catch up on over the lack of Arrow episodes for the last couple weeks. But
And we hope that you enjoyed our video episode that took me forever to post. You know, it really, editing wasn't a big deal. Exporting it was kind of a big deal. It was more so uploading it. It
takes so long.
I think we hadn't, neither of us have really uploaded anything that long, so we haven't really looked at how long it takes.
Yeah.
And it literally, the first time I uploaded it, it took 2.5 days uninterrupted to upload. And then I found out that YouTube doesn't let you upload videos over 15 minutes unless you request.
Oh, you didn't have
No, I didn't. I never. Cause,
see, I should have given
yeah,
you
I didn't know that. Okay. So it uploaded it after 2.5 days and then was like, yeah, this is too long.
Wow.
So I had to request that, delete that video, and then upload it again. And what I actually ended up uploading was a lower quality version so that it would upload faster.
Right, yeah.
That still took a day and a half. Yeah. So
thank you for bearing with us through that, though.
Yes, yes. And I didn't want to put out the audio until the video was out because I put the audio out the morning of and the video the evening of just because that's when it was done uploading and everything.
Yeah.
And people were saying, where's the video podcast? So, I mean, it was a good experiment. It was interesting to do. I don't think that we'll do another video podcast like that one.
Yeah, we'll try to. I feel like
the video needs to be
a bit more dynamic and we'll find. But we appreciate you sitting through that. And I mean, now you know sort of what we look like if you watched it, which is kind of fun. And people were commenting and people are pretty interactive. And it's nice. I had a chance to spend more time on the Facebook page over the break and see how people are interacting. I like it. More people saying that I should talk more, which is good. So I'll take that to heart and try as much as possible.
It's not going to happen, though. No. It doesn't matter.
Ugh. And I also got a chance to check out some other Arrow podcasts that are out, which is good, too. I really like our format. I must say that I really enjoy it's sort of like a commentary of the episode as opposed to like a recap. We let you come through the episode with us, which is, I think gives it a little bit different than rather than breaking down the episode in the beginning and then going through it or things like that. So it's exciting. Anyway.
Cool.
Yeah.
Speaking of all of our awesome listeners, let's read a piece of listener mail. We've got another one from Ramona Lee. She says, I've been a longtime listener of another podcast that your podcast format reminds me of called Geek Out Loud. Unfortunately, I am always behind. So see me here, knitting and catching up on my podcasts, the Mickey Chlorians episode, when I hear Steve introduce a Michael Cohen. I'm like, meh, whatever, thinking it was just a different Michael Cohen who has a podcast about comic books. And then you plug the Quiver podcast, and I'm like, yes! So, not much to say about last night's episode. Nice to see Thea's backbone on the side of doing something good and getting her mother out of the house. I was kind of surprised with Oliver's behavior after going up against Merlin. I guess I didn't think he'd break down so easily, especially since he always seems as if nothing can hurt him. Almost Vulcan-like. Let's bring in another franchise there. It is nice to see a more human touch to him. I was laughing when Diggle was talking about his previously prepared speeches for Oliver. I can just imagine him flipping through a set of numbered cue cards looking for the right speech for whatever Oliver needs a talking to about. A quick question, is the killer firefighter guy a bad guy from the comics, or was he created just for this episode? So I'll answer that question first. Firefly is a character from the comics. I don't know his origin. I think he might be a Batman.
They're bringing in Batman villains all over the place.
Well,
on this show
The thing is that Batman tends to be one of those characters because it's called the Trinity in DC Comics. There's Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
So those three characters, Wonder Woman to a lesser degree, mostly Batman and Superman, a lot of the DC Universe's villains were introduced in either of those or Justice League. Or Teen Titans. If you put those four comics, they're not really individual comics because Justice League has had multiple incarnations, and Superman and Batman each have 4 titles a month. So, but if you put those groups of characters together, you can account for, I think, a very large number of DC's villains, at least the ones that we're used to seeing. So, yeah, Firefly, if you ever watched The Batman, he was actually a recurring villain on that show.
Yeah, and it looks like he's the... Wikipedia tells me that he was created in Detective Comics number 184, yeah, so in Batman.
Yeah.
So, yeah, exciting.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, so Garfield Lyons was that the name of the guy in this one? Garfield Lyons?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's who that is.
It's very different from the Firefly from the comics. Mm-hmm. The Firefly from the comics is a kind of a tech wizard, and he builds a suit that gives him the ability to fly, and it also has pyrotechnic abilities, so he can like shoot fire out of his hands and I think control flame to a certain degree in some incarnations. So it's very in the Batman cartoon, the cartoon, he. Kind of, it was almost like napalm, like it was almost like this jet propellant that he used. So very different.
Arrow's world doesn't set you up to have these fantastical villains yet. Like that's
There was one comment in this episode that makes me think, like, I don't think we're gonna get there anytime soon. But I think that at a certain point, no different than Smallville. Set up in the first 2 seasons that everything had to do with the meteor rocks.
Yeah.
And then I think it was either season 3 or 4 when Bart shows up for the first time.
And it
becomes a much larger world. Yeah. And you're like, there's other ways to have superpowers other than being from Krypton or being affected by kryptonite.
But I just mean, like, this one, I mean, it's still keeping it very real. Yep. Like, as opposed to, like, the character where it's the full, like, get up, he was wearing a Firefly. And I'll talk about later about the Firefly, I think, in this, when we get to see him, I have a few things to talk about, which is good.
Yeah.
Which, speaking of, I think we're, like, diving right into the actual episode.
Yeah, so, yeah. I just wanted to give a quick shout out to Steve at Geek Out Loud, because he let me give a shout out on his podcast for Quiver. So hopefully some of you guys are listening to Quiver because you listen to Geek Out Loud. I know there is a lot of crossover, and I'll tell you exactly why the format of Quiver is similar to stuff that Steve does. One of the reasons why I podcast is because Steve and Derek now on Geek Out Loud. Geek Out Loud used to just be Steve's thing, but now Derek Russell is also on there. And they had a podcast when Smallville was on called Starkville's House of L. And that was one of the first... That and the Forcecast, the Star Wars podcast, which actually I think has just stopped.
Yeah.
The guys who were doing it have moved on and they've started a new podcast. I don't know what's happened to the Forcecast in the interim. But if you want to listen to a Star Wars podcast, listen to Frontline's The Clone Wars podcast, which is my other podcast. But yeah, I listening to those 2 podcasts, those were the first ones that I got into, and I became friends with Derek, and then eventually with Steve, helping them out with their websites and with graphic design and that sort of thing, and some audio editing and that sort of thing over the years, and that's how I got into podcasting. So this format of sort of, we do our thing at the beginning, we talk about stuff, and we do some reader mail, and then we go into essentially a recap, but the way we do our recap is a little bit different because thankfully Amanda and I can be in the same room as you guys saw in the video podcast and we can just watch the episode, whereas I think a lot of podcasting partnerships they have to do it over Skype, or I know I with Frontlines I do it over Skype with my friend Matt, and it's a lot more difficult because you can't go, okay, 3, 2, 1 hit play and then start going over the episodes. So so those formats tend to be much more like reading a recap off of paper, whereas ours is much more conversational.
And I
agree with you. I really enjoy our format. I kind of wish that some more podcasts would take that approach have that sort of... Because the one thing, I hope that some of you out there are watching the episode with us, not just... taking us with you wherever you go. I mean, either one's awesome. But
yeah, either one. Do either
yeah,
one.
Yeah, but I hope, insight. Like, yeah, yeah. We're presenting it in that format. Yeah.
So and the reason I was so on board with it, too, is because one of my favorite things is I love special features and watching episodes with hearing comments, and you just get that little extra insight that you might not have seen the first time around, which is, I think...
Yeah, well, fun, and you get to watch it again, which means... Yeah. That we can become even more hardcore fans of our show because you don't just watch the episode once. Like for us, we watch it and then we watch it again to record too. And so we've seen every episode of Arrow
at least twice. Yeah.
So that means that, you know, we'll remember things a little bit better, I hope.
Yeah, I know, which is good.
Going forward, right?
Yeah, which is good.
But yeah, so so thank you for following us all over the place wherever we are on the internet. Let's do some really quick plugs. What are your other
Things on the internet? You can see me on the internet. Oh man, I feel really guilty because I haven't been doing much with 4Geeks at all. But that's the other thing I'm sort of doing, 4Geeks Media. And it's mostly lower mainland based, so. Yeah. Unfortunately, not much going on with that, but we still got episodes coming out, and GeekoCon is the big thing I'm trying to work on right now. We went to a big convention in August, and it's really awesome. It's geeky women in science and technology and comics and all that stuff, so I'm trying to get coverage for that covered right now, but I don't know. You probably can find me other places on the internet as well.
You also did West Coast Geeks versus Nerds.
Oh, yeah!
Which
West
they
Coast
have a
Geeks
podcast,
versus
Nerds. Right?
They totally do, and they're fantastic. And Femageddon is coming up in February, which I'm really excited for. And I might.
Whose
I don't
team
know,
are you on?
I don't know if I'm going to 100% be on it. I'm helping them with a couple things. They might. I don't know the Aliens franchise that well, because they really needed someone for Ripley, and I'm kind of like, you know what?
So what Geeks versus Nerds is a debate-style format, and they'll take two things like Gandalf versus Yoda was on was
and
their
I
last
did
show.
So I did one a while ago. You find it online, West Coast Geeks versus Nerds, which was Superman versus Goku.
Yeah.
And it's really exciting because someone also posted something recently about Superman versus Goku, but I all love Team Superman, man. Yeah. It was awesome. So so that just came out, and hopefully, I mean, even if not in February, we'll come up sometime soon. They usually put out, I think they try like every second week to have a couple of episodes out. So that's based on, and it was originally, so Geeks versus Nerds is actually something that is on the West Coast of I guess Canada, so it came from Halifax, and then
on the East Coast.
On the East Coast, and we're here on the West Coast, and Chris came over from Halifax and started it down here. So it's West Coast Geeks versus Nerds, and you can find that. I think versus is spelled out, so WC Geeks versus Nerds.com.
Okay, cool. And anything else?
You know what? It's okay. I'll post about it on Facebook or something.
And then I've mentioned everything. I mean, Quiver, obviously. Frontlines, which you can find at clonewarspodcast.com. Yeah. And then the other thing is 8 Bits of Destiny, which is an art show that I started, and it's about video games. Like, the art show is video game themed.
And 4Geeks Media covered it.
Yes,
there's an episode about 8 Bits of Destiny.
And our friend Victor has just recently started doing podcasts with a couple of our friends. And I've been on a couple episodes of that. So, that's 8bitsofdestiny.com.
Lots of podcasting that you can
listen to. Yeah, no, so lots of awesome stuff. Yeah. If you like what you hear on this, you should listen to all of the other places that we are on the internet.
On the internet. Yeah. It's exciting.
Cool. Well, with that, let's jump into the episode.
Yay. I feel like there's so much, I feel like we just spiel on in the beginning, which is good. I like it. Okay, first opening shot though, my favorite shot of the entire, it's pause right now, that stay safe at night, sleep with a fireman. I just love that it sort of pans over it, but brilliant, brilliant bumper sticker, and I like whoever. So the director of this episode is also directing an episode in February, I think. His name is something cool. It's like Eagle Eggleston or something. Anyways, I don't know, but it's really, and I feel like that's a shot setup, which I kind of like. I don't know if that's said in the script, right? It's one of those things that say in the script, pan over bumper sticker that says sleep with a fireman. I don't know. Anyways,
I'm sure it was in the script. It's a writing thing.
But it's exciting. So anyways, diving right in, we have the fire action starting off. So we flip flopped between me thinking this episode cost a lot of money. And then maybe you thinking the episode maybe didn't spend that much money on things. And I'm just curious.
I think...
I feel like fire always, whenever you're dealing with that many special effects, you just have like extra...
Yeah.
Extra things to have to
I think
about.
The fire was very... I have to be political about how I say this. I don't want to say poorly done, but I don't want to say it was, you could tell that it was special effects. You could tell that it was pyrotechnics. Whereas other shows that do fire on a regular basis, and obviously we don't do it on a regular basis. Well, it was real fire, so there's that.
Can I just point out the crotch shot on Ollie as he's getting up on that, like, I'm just sorry. I apologize for cutting you off.
That's
but,
okay.
Like,
that's okay, because we're kind of talking over his whole rehab thing, and he's trying
like
to get back up to...
I feel like he's naked every episode, and sometimes you just have to talk over it.
But Oliver's trying to get back to full strength, and he's not there. He can't shoot the tennis ball out of the air, and Diggle maybe not quite noticing that.
No, he said rehab going good. He came in very sarcastically. And But it's...
But yeah, I don't know. I just feel like you could kind of see the almost see the nozzles where the fire was coming out.
Okay.
If you were watching the right things, and that might just be me. That's just I tend to watch shows.
I don't know. I still feel like
that technical stuff.
Still
but.
Other like elements of it's more. I think it's more than they've had previously. Like how many? Like this is like I think a really special effects intense episode.
Yeah, I mean, they do a lot of effects on this show.
Right.
They do a lot of practical effects on this show,
which I think is
one of the best things.
Yeah, it's awesome.
We get a bit of CG every once in a while,
but not a ton. Actually, you're right. That's what I was commenting on later, where they just do that camera pan and you see Laurel's face and reflected in the phone, which seems really silly, but it's a practical effect, right? Like, where they really are using the tools that they have at their disposal.
Practical effects are a funny thing, though, because in some instances, a practical effect is going to be cheaper, and in other instances a practical effect is going to be way more expensive. The practical effects that they did with the fire, it's going to be cheaper than doing it as CG, at least to get something realistic looking.
And so sorry, we're just flashing back to the island here. So you had that whole thing with Ollie really wanting to spend with his time with his family, and we'll see how that progresses. But this is the kicking off the island from where we left it last time, right? When we thought Yao Fei was possibly
the overlap,
archer.
Like a little bit of
overlap there, because it got to this point, right, where he's hiding in the trees and he sees Yao Fei get beat up and taken away, right?
By Deathstroke.
Yes, and that mask is so tight on his face. I wonder what that actor is like, claustrophobic or anything. Anyways. And they haven't changed the arrow thing yet.
I don't think we'll see a change to that until season 2 if they change it.
Sorry, what was I going to say? Oh, the island. Anyways, I like going back to the island, and we're really, it's sort of a continuation, but they also jumped ahead 6 weeks, which I really liked in the beginning. They lay out that it's coming and it's the same time as the episodes are coming out, which is really cool. And it's nice to have that consistency. Which also foreshadows to the idea that if they do a cliffhanger at the end of this season, that possibly the writers will have the wherewithal to then jump ahead 2 months when they come back and do flashbacks to catch up.
There's kind of two routes that you can go, right?
Because
you can say, okay, we take the summer off and so does the hero. I find Smallville often did it the best, where they would really seamlessly transition you by having the season finale take place. In May. And like the episodes taking place in May. And then the season premiere would usually be the next day or the next week. And then you would slowly
jump.
And then you would jump ahead 2 weeks, and then you jump ahead a month, and then all of a sudden you'd be in October. And it was all like, it was, you didn't notice it because it wasn't this jarring transition. So I think they'll do something similar, because you can't just have him disappear.
You can't... but I mean, sometimes they do something where you're just like, you come back again. We've seen in this episode, for 6 weeks, he's taken some time off to be with his family.
But we have a reason why, because he was also in the hospital and he needed to heal. So that means that we didn't need the story of him doing rehab. We saw in 5 minutes him doing rehab, right? Like, it wouldn't have been interesting if he's not being the Hood, as they're calling him now. They're just calling him the Hood all the time.
So Moira, in this episode, was... annoying. Is that the right word that I'm looking for?
Annoying?
Yeah. And I'm kind of liking the Thea and Ollie scenes more so now than I did previously.
Yeah.
Like, I love this, that sometimes they just give Stephen and Mel these weird lines where he's
Galifianakis. Yeah.
Where he just tries to do, I don't know. They keep it light. They're trying to keep it light. And Thea's pants have flowers on them. I just wanted to point out.
Yeah, if you were
that we're back to the pants. Although she's wearing a plaid shirt with flowered pants. I'm just gonna say that upsets me on many levels. So I'm just gonna put it out there.
Thea makes some interesting choices when she gets up in the morning.
And she's wearing, like, moccasins, too. They're, like, those little, like, the like, ballet slipper flat things.
Yeah. It's probably her $200 lounging around the house outfit.
Yeah, exactly.
Most of us probably couldn't afford to dress like that when we're going out for the evening.
So I really liked this having some sincerity about talking about Walter, where you really get this sense of family that they try. I think they established that last episode, right? Like, they really did a lot with the Christmas thing to be like, we're going to take a family photo. And
with him giving her the ride to school.
Yeah,
and that
they're really sort of integrating this family, which makes it make more sense and grounded. And I'm understanding that Ollie, he does feel more connected to his family, like he has things to lose. Which is, I mean, exciting. Now, this woman on television, do we know who she is? Or did they talk at all?
No, I don't think so.
It's just interesting. I wonder if it's going to be, like, a recurrent thing that she's, like, some force for hero good.
I would like to see something like that. Like, I'd like to see them sort of... But, you know, like, I think that's our first indication that Oliver won't be the only hero.
Yeah, exactly.
That we're going to get some copycats / new heroes down the road.
Oh, I have to point out my favorite couple is now on the screen.
Tommy's being adorable
as
usual.
Tommy is adorable. Look at this. He wrote out a list that says reasons why I should have a drawer. It's so cute.
She's so scared, terrified of all of this, like, commitment and moving forward in their relationship.
But anyways,
because she's still in love with Oliver.
Oh, yeah. Poor Tommy. Ugh. Anyways. But,
she's gonna get knocked out at some point by a supervillain, and Tommy's gonna be there, and he's gonna, like, save her and, like, catch her, and she's gonna, like, turn and say, Oliver.
And he's gonna just have this terrible look on his face. Okay, I'm gonna actually say, later on in this, again, we're talking over the plot point where the friend comes and is like, hey, I believe, anyways.
We haven't talked about any of the actual plot in this episode.
But, later in this episode, I really get the indication that Tommy, Laurel... dynamic being challenged by Oliver inadvertently through when she's on the phone and hides it from him, right? She's talking to the hood on the phone and like, I don't know. And it could even be something where maybe Tommy finds out that all, anyways, well, anyways.
Yeah, it'll be the Laurel arrow situation, not the Oliver. It'll be the arrow that pulls them apart.
Yeah. Which is sad. But this, I really liked the science behind this, how she looked into her brother's death, and, like, it made sense. The idea that they really, kudos to the writers for getting all of this sort of jargon right, like, the idea of, like, how hot the fire burns and other people burning hotter than that, and the, right? It just makes a lot of sense, so.
Yeah. Well, you know, something had to sort of tip them off, but it was a nice, actual legitimate
thing that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, like some real science, not pseudoscience.
Yeah.
Which was nice. And not just like, it's not the list. And I think that's a really big thing.
Yeah.
So this is one of our first episodes where it straight up has nothing to do with the list. I think we could probably find out later on down the road that whoever was building that building and cutting corners is on the list.
But
as far as we're concerned in this episode, it has nothing to do with the corruption of Starling City. So
I just want to shout out to the ICU tech or whatever that they keep bringing back, which is kind of cool. And I've noticed that I was, again, over the break, scouring IMDb and finding a lot of consistency in who they're bringing back for certain things, which I like. And I think it's probably that Vancouver actor pool that they're pulling out of, because they're all local and...
There's a partially eaten donut on his desk. That's awesome. That's some really funny set deck. It was a sour cream glaze from Tim Hortons, in case anybody was wondering.
Oh, and then see, this is the shot I'm talking about where you see her reflection in the phone, and it's just like kind of a cool shot.
Yeah.
And then you get that, I don't know, it's just nice.
So she's taken the phone that he was given in like two episodes ago?
Yeah, I think so. I don't remember.
That Detective Lance was given... so that he could contact the vigilante.
Yeah.
And so she has it now, and she's going to... Well, she did. She contacts Oliver, not knowing it's Oliver.
He's got his face where he's like... Laurel's like, hello? And he's like, huh, Laurel, interesting. He's doing a good job of not talking... I don't know. He's sort of... I'm trying to figure him out in this episode. Like, really, it's an interesting transition throughout it, where he's sort of understanding mm-hmm. the things that he recognizes and that he connects with and his family and the things that he cares about, while still trying to stay distant. It's really, yeah. I don't know, it's interesting. The Arrow seems to be winning in a lot of ways, which is good.
Like, I think he always keeps his back to her when he's talking to Laurel.
Because,
and then he turns on his little voice disguised button.
I love that it said that in the brackets, in the closed caption.
Yeah. It's important to know, even if you can't mm-hmm. hear, that his voice is disguised. Yeah. So they're meeting. He's disabled the electricity to her apartment, which she should really talk to the super about.
Oh, and this part where he's just like, I heard what you said about me.
Yeah, it was really like
it was kind of, it really was, where he's like, I'm upset with you.
Yeah.
But it's kind of,
why should I help you? You said a mean thing. Yeah.
But I mean, you know what? It sort of shows that he's a real person, I guess, which is kind of nice, and that. I don't know. There's like a
forgiveness. No, I liked there. It. I liked it because it was almost a moment of Oliver, old Oliver.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Abercrombie Oliver shining through a little bit like, you said that I was really mean, so why should I help you?
Oh, he made a comment about Diggle's arms being the size of bowling balls, because that's awesome. Because Diggle's shirtless, by the way.
And huge. And
this is the first time he's been fully shirtless, because previously he was wearing that black beater, which,
like,
he's
bigger than Oliver.
He is. He's a good-looking man. I'll just put it out there right now. That hasn't gotten enough cred. I think this is when everybody's like, you know who needs more cred? Diggle.
Yeah.
Let's take his shirt off.
Yeah.
Weirdly enough, in this show, it's like on par with the, like, look at all these acting and this stunts and this, like, I don't know, Ollie doing all his own work.
I just need to say, I never thought I'd have to say this about a CW show, but can the girls get naked more often, please? I'm like, I'm not saying the guys should be naked less often.
No,
I appreciate,
just,
like, you guys like that. All of you out there who appreciate that sort
of thing. Maybe when it comes to stereotyping audiences, don't you feel like it's easier to get guys to watch comic book related shows than it is perhaps to get women to watch comic book related shows?
Absolutely.
So, and I posted on the Facebook wall, you'll be glad, it was me, by the way, I put on the thing saying, guess who posted it, but 13 reasons to watch Arrow, and it was, you know, 13 pictures of Stephen Amell's abs. But I loved it because my sister commented afterwards, she's like, I've never seen Arrow, but I'm going to watch it now. And it's just that, like, you know, they know what they're doing, I guess, as a CW show, so...
So Tommy has shown up and he wants to do a firefighters fundraiser at their constantly under construction club, not realizing that this is just Oliver's cover story for having an Arrow cave.
But I think he's actually starting a club, though. Like,
but I think he's taking his time so that it's just a really good excuse.
Yeah.
And having Tommy in the mix is kind of, you can tell that he's a little bit annoyed by it.
Yeah.
It's like, you really, why are you working on this? Like, nobody's supposed to be working on it.
I feel really guilty that we notice people's pants all the time, because otherwise I would not have noticed that her friend is wearing the exact same outfit that she was wearing a couple episodes ago. Because there's yellow pants. I remember totally commenting on those yellow tights previously.
I think, I don't know that they were exactly the same.
I'm pretty sure they're the exact same pants.
Very similar clothes.
But it makes sense because they're real people, and I don't own 17 different pairs of pants. I'm pretty sure I wear the same jeans every other
day.
So, kudos to them.
So, Detective Lance, being a detective and all, notices that the phone, which is pretty major evidence, is missing off of his desk.
Yeah.
I would just like to say, if you're such a great detective, Detective Lance, stop leaving evidence lying on your desk where anybody can take it. Somebody could just look at that and go, oh, a free iPhone, and take it.
Anywho, but can we just shout out to Paul Blackthorne again for being awesome.
For being
just
the best
on the
show.
His acting is great. Like, it's
amazing.
Not, it's just, it's brilliant. You know who I want? I want him and, oh my god, what's, Billy Burke, I think, the guy from Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
I think them in a room together doing some sort of acting would be amazing.
Revolution is offensive to people who work in the IT industry.
Okay, I don't actually watch the show, I never have, but I like Billy Burke from other things, and I just love Billy Burke. But Billy Burke is great.
Sure.
He's a fantastic actor as well. I just think they remind me, they have the same tone to them. That's why. And this actor, I'm pretty sure, was from Smallville, wasn't he? He was the dark side, he got into his head in the final season, in episode 10. In season 10, I
think. Yes. Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. If not, yeah. they look very similar.
Anyways, but he's the COO of yes. Clean Industries.
Chief Operating Officer.
I know.
I wasn't questioning whether you know it. I was informing the listeners okay. of what it means. There might be some 15, 16-year-olds watching or listening. Yeah, so there's this whole idea that with Walter out of the picture, who mm-hmm. has been kidnapped, yeah. we saw last episode, mm-hmm. There's essentially nobody running. Not like the no. like the company see, runs see, itself.
Is, it's like, no, the COO runs the company, the CEO yes. looks like they run the company. Yes. It's the same in theater, where the executive director actually runs the company, and the artistic director runs the company. I don't know, it's, anyways, COOs. Power to them. Anyways.
In any case, so. The CEO is like the figurehead. They're yeah, like the, yeah. the public face
yeah,
of a
yeah,
company.
Yeah, yeah. So they're worried
and
about
so
the
they don't
stocks,
have one right
deal.
Now.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And yeah. so that he was asking yeah. Moira to come back. Yeah.
Now, this I was confused about. It was some jargon about the fire starting. So mm-hmm. is this Diggle dragging, I got your gear in the car. Oh, so he's just dragging Ollie along saying, you've got to go deal with this fire?
Yeah, I think that they were going to do more detective work, yeah, but then Diggle is like, no, you can't, there's no time, we know where he's going to strike next, it's here.
Yeah.
So,
and now we've got new island footage, so this is the new, this is
of him starting a fire.
Yeah, by blowing on the ground, miraculously.
He was doing some stuff.
But,
I don't know where he learned that skill, but he learned it.
Crazy rain, snow, this was probably back in... You know, the crazy rain. I don't know what that
it's
is.
It's just convenient that while it's fall outside on the show, it's fall outside in Starling City, it's also fall
on the island. There you go. Yeah.
He must have gotten marooned around the same time that he came back.
Dude, it's just like, these trees are just so intensely Canadian.
Vancouver?
I just want to point it out. It's like, it's this forest, I'm just like, can you guys...
It's the least tropical island.
They're probably not even in Stanley Park. They're probably at UBC at that point, right? Isn't that where? I don't know. It's something intensely...
Honestly, they could be anywhere. They could be in Burnaby Mountain Park, for all we know. It all looks the same in Vancouver.
Yeah. But, anyways, he's being caught up by...
Yeah.
This is going to be... So, this is the idea. So, I was trying to find a parallel with the island, right? And you said that maybe there's not so much a thematic parallel in this episode.
I think we're getting
it's
more
really
plot.
Just more plot based on the island, so these two separate ideas, which is kind of cool. Now, this kind of sucks. This is one of the first times that Ollie has not saved somebody.
Yes.
From...
Not even
right,
a little
like,
bit.
He didn't even miss. He just, like, didn't save him. Like, that guy just died, full-on just got dropped into the fire. And there's not even this... Like, it's just very sort of poignant, I guess.
Well, he doesn't even really take a moment to acknowledge the fact that this guy just died
just
and it was
sort of
his
like
fault.
Missed
not
entirely.
His fault, but...
No. And I was trying to understand, so this is kind of cool. You get that, the Firefly tattoo.
Yes.
Which is cool, and the burn, which is kind of interesting. Anyways, but you got Ollie on the ground and there's that definite moment where he's like, there's something that happens, right? You don't know exactly what it is, but you get the idea.
He's not at 100%.
Exactly.
He's not back to,
you
know, kicking butt and taking names. And he's having a hard time coming back to this life, I think.
Yeah.
The whole hero thing, after having really gotten defeated for the first time, having been defeated for the first time by Merlin. And I think Diggle will talk about it, and he's kind of shaking his confidence a little bit.
Yeah. And you get Broody Oliver here, which is kind of interesting. This is a cool shot too. No, I really, you know what? I think that these shot choices are director. This is a director thing, right? Like, I really like how this episode was filmed. I'm kind of, I just think that they're making some interesting choices. And so, anyways, shout out to Eagle, I guess, pretty sure his name, who's like I say, directing a later episode. So I'm going to look forward to maybe it'll have a similar consistency to it.
Yes,
which is good. I just undo the top button of your shirt, Abercrombie Oliver. It's really upsetting me.
I think it'll be a moment when it happens, when like he sort of he gets rid of that. Well, I mean, we see him. Yeah. He gets rid of the outfit in this episode.
Well,
so
I
it
mean,
kind
you know,
of
he just puts on the vest. I don't know if he gets rid of, but yeah, he slowly. This is right the transition episode where he's
yes, yes.
Yeah. He killed. This is the first guy he really kills, right?
Yeah,
and so it's. It's important for... Is it maybe, like, the start of who he is now? Is
I
that
think
maybe
that's,
why
I
this...
think that's the idea, yeah, is that, like, it's... he's struggling with some of the same stuff now that he was the first time that he had to, you know, take a life and
right.
fight
or
for
get,
his,
and get
for
close
survival.
To death, I guess, maybe yeah. would be it as well, right? Like, it was one of the first times that he didn't have Yao Fei, and he was really sort yeah. of, I mean, he goes into the water, and anyways. And so this is what I'm talking about. So Laurel, who's coming to the corner, again, this is kind of an interesting shot as well, where she's just right against the wall and sort of hiding in her own house from, I guess, from Tommy, so...
Rent must be really cheap in Starling City because her place is so nice.
Amazing, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe she lives near the bad part of town.
And near the bad part of town, in a really nice.
She's made it look
nice.
Maybe she's just a really good decorator.
Was she hiding from him? I guess she was hiding from Tommy.
She was hiding from Tommy. That's what I'm talking about. So that's the moment right there where you have that, which is beautiful. I actually want to go back and look at it. Where you've got just the side of her face and him. Sort of in the background and leaving, where it's nothing to him, but it is something to her.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
Almost
right?
worse.
It really, it's much worse, right? Yeah. Because you get that where she recognizes that there's something for him to be upset about.
It's one of those moments on this show that I think makes this such a great genre show, is that in a lot of instances, they've got, you know, we expect them to go left just like everybody else, but instead they decide to go right.
Yeah.
So normally you would have, if that's the storyline you're going to set up, you would have Tommy see her on the phone. Being sort of like secretive about it, and we would, the shot would have been on him as she walked away. But instead on this show... they choose to attack it from the other angle, where she is going to drive the wedge between the two of them.
By herself.
She's going to be solely responsible for it. It won't be... And that, you know, it'll be interesting, because Tommy will remain a likable character in that, and Laurel will be the one who sort of breaks them apart, right?
Yeah, which is just... it's brilliant. It's great.
Eventually, because it is going to happen, because...
Oh, shush, you know what? You don't know! They could just... totally. Anyways, I'm not going to get into it, but we talked over the entire Diggle beating up Ollie scene, which basically is what happened, so that's why we moved on.
Yeah, there was a throwdown.
Yeah.
And,
which is good. Yeah.
Fire hall, which is just down the street from my house,
it's
literally like we walk there 5 minutes.
Yeah.
This is one of the places we'll show you guys this on video.
It's exciting. And it will not have that big American flag in the background.
It won't. It will
not. But, you know. It's great. We actually have a lot of firehouses like this. I really like just to randomly talk about the decor in Vancouver. Because there's one near my house too, but... anywho, I think this is interesting that Laurel and Ollie have a conversation about Oliver's best friend having a problem with his girlfriend.
Yes.
Which is kind of a cool way to... again, it's an interesting part to the show. I like.
Yeah.
I also really like her toque. Or her hat. Or what do the Americans call it? A beanie? It's a toque.
Yeah, but I think they call it a beanie, which it's not
which
a beanie.
Not,
a beanie is like a little tiny
thing with a wheel on the top.
Yeah, propeller. Yeah.
Anyways, it's a good conversation. It's a good color on her too. Her eyes are really popping. I don't know why I'm commenting on that, but I just think it was really like a really good stylistic choice. I think they're doing some good things with Laurel stylistically. And she's still a likable character. Remember, I think I was on the fence about Laurel in the first couple episodes, and I think I'm really understanding her and really enjoying her as a well-rounded character.
Yeah.
Because remember that episode where she said daddy and it really bothered me? Where I think that she's coming into her own and she's making some choices. She's becoming more defined and she's really, I think, growing on me. And also the way that she's treating the Oliver Tommy thing. I think that it's okay. Like, I think that she's moving in a direction that I can support and that I enjoy, so... just to throw that out there. I think they're actually doing a lot with the females in this show. And also with what's-her-face, Thea as well, in this episode wasn't as annoying. Like, I think it's good there. And so this is an interesting investigative angle that's sort of Lois and Clark-esque, where you have them finding out information about the fire hall. So it's good.
Yeah, and working together, and but she never really... questions why Oliver
comes
is so
back
interested,
and, is all like,
and also like there, the moment in a second when she walks out and she calls the vigilante,
and he's like, "I'm gonna run down the street the opposite direction."
And well, he goes the other way and answers the phone, and she said, like, essentially says, "I found out something," and then he's like, So he says where she was, and then that's the end of the... And then he's like, bye, and he hangs up. And it's like, I didn't tell you the important information that I just learned that will lead you to the what you're going to figure out. And then later on, when Oliver shows up and is like, I don't think that he's really dead. And it's like, wait, Oliver, why do you care? Yeah, why do you care?
But, you know, it's okay. We're going to get around that. I feel like the first half of this episode started off in a really solid place. Good science. Yes. Good. It made sense. And then the latter half is just all sort of circumstantial. And that we're just like, it's moving the plot forward. But, again, Oliver with his voice disguised. It's just interesting that they have that. So, the smoking body on the island.
Steaming body.
Yeah, but there's no steam in the wide shot, which bothers me. Like, it's just them... I don't know. Is it because the water's really, really cold?
It's because the water is warmer than the air.
So they... Okay. Interesting. I wonder if they had to... Where would they have found that? Did they have to, like, throw them...
Probably up near Harrison.
Oh, see, that would make much more sense. So that they didn't have to throw them into a freezing lake and then deal with boiling water and other stuff. But anyways. Working out the logistics of that actually made my brain hurt a little bit. I was like, what kind of water did they use? Anyways. Really, really unnecessary to talk about in this podcast. Amanda's random brain. And we're back at the Luther Mansion. I mean, the Queen Mansion. And Moira's looking at photos. She's really dopey and weird in this episode. I don't know. It bothers me when they can't make characters decide what they're like. What is the point of keeping Walter alive? And you still being part of this organization if it's doing this to you, and
I think they missed an opportunity with it, mm-hmm. Like what you just said. She knows that Walter is okay. She knows where he is.
Yeah.
She also knows that she's the reason why he's there.
Yeah.
I mean, he's somewhat to blame himself for
not stopping.
Yeah.
She's
very responsible. She's probably 90% responsible, maybe 10%.
Yeah.
So yeah, for her to, I mean, there's a little bit of it. She's kind of like, you know what? You don't know anything about this. You don't know what I'm dealing with.
Yeah.
But Thea's kind of like, oh, I do, because this is just like when Dad died. And it's like, no, it's not. And then I think she has a moment of like, oh, wait. Yeah, it is. I was responsible for that too.
Yeah.
Right? She found out after the fact with that one, whereas with this one, she finds out before.
Oh, and I just want to throw this in. We talked over it, but it's actually an important point, I think. There was a moment where Laurel said, after Sarah went missing, she kept looking into why the boat
sank. Yeah, super important.
Which is really important. I think it's totally going to come up later.
Yeah.
Because where did all of that research go? How is that?
Oliver is going to get his hands
on
that.
And it's
going
to really, I think, tip a scale. So kudos again to the writers for putting all these seeds places. And just as long as they get used later on, it's going to be great to have.
Well,
just like
Laurel ending up with the phone in this episode.
Yeah.
These are things that we're setting up so that later on down the road we can have
a reason for it.
The characters are a little bit more interconnected with the vigilante, not just with Oliver, because all these characters are related to Oliver in some way.
Yeah.
But Diggle is really the only one with a connection to the vigilante. Merlin now at this point, but. Nobody else is really all that connected to the vigilante, so we have to keep on bringing in all of these characters, doing all of these things in every episode. But now, we set up the phone in order for him to end up with it, or in order for Laurel to end up with it, and now they can have, like you said, the Lois and Clark sort of thing, where they're going to solve mysteries together, sort of thing. It's going to be interesting.
And this is a nice moment, too, in this show where, so it's Diggle and Ollie talking, which, now that I think about it, the first time that they were, where he got beat up, I can't even remember the arc of what these two characters have gone through this episode, but this is the
it's just
whatever it is,
him
this is the culmination of it, right? Yeah. Is of really them having the conversation that it's, that Diggle's really there to ground Ollie and be like, no, it's a good thing that you're afraid of death now, because it'll make you fight harder.
Well,
because
in the last episode, if you guys remember, it was a long time ago, but hopefully you just listened to us talk about it last week.
Yeah.
And, Diggle was sort of saying, you've got a little bit too much of this, ego going on, where nobody's knocked you down yet, but somebody's going to sooner or later, and then Merlin does, right? And so now we're dealing with the fallout of that, of Oliver having been up on this pedestal, and it's a really long fall. And so now he's having a hard time getting back up after that.
So let's remember this Nodal Tower fire, because that'll probably be important later. So Nodal Tower... Anyways, but yeah, so Garfield, so you really, by the way, if it took you this long to realize that he was the bad guy, there's something.
Yeah, you weren't paying attention.
But you weren't paying attention to the tropes of all CW shows and detective shows.
That was an interesting pan up on Laurel's
it
legs.
Her legs were kind of weird. I wonder if those were stunt legs. They didn't look like her legs. I don't know.
Cool.
I know it's a really random thing to, anyways. They're wearing a lot of blues right now. I don't know, again, I don't know why I'm pointing out these things, but it's something I noticed in this episode. Moira was wearing blue, she's wearing blue now.
Well, look, the balloons are blue and white.
Yeah, I don't know, they're setting up some, they're setting up, I think, colors of the show. So they're half, they're almost halfway through, they are, but they're just over, so it's, I think they're finding the, like, the color schemes of the shows and the tone of the shows and how it's all working, so... It's all, I don't know, it's all something.
No, you're right, I mean, like it is very, like, every... If you look, a lot of the background players are actually wearing reds.
Yeah.
And then our main cast are wearing blue.
Which
and they're and everybody else is being lit yellow and they're being lit blue.
Yeah.
So they're popping a little bit more. They're standing out. So.
It's a and
it's super important stuff to notice because it's sort of a language of the show, and in the future we'll be able to watch stuff like that and see what they're trying to communicate to us that's maybe not in the script.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Something that's really a little that'll hint at stuff in the future.
Yeah. Which is great.
I do like the blue and yellow is actually very Black Canary.
Because
in comics they tend to give things a blue hue when they're supposed to be black.
Yeah, nice.
In order to not have everything just be black.
Cool.
But
which could set something up for maybe the tone of this episode as a Canary-esque episode.
She's getting there, right?
We haven't actually talked about that this episode.
When she gets the phone, I think this is her first step into becoming
and she's investigating something. And it was kind of interesting. She had that moment where she looked at Ollie being like, why are you investigating this as well? They did have that moment where she, which was kind of nice. But it's just interesting. And she's processing a lot of things right now. And it's an interesting, I don't know, interesting episode. So, and I don't know. I'm just kind of intrigued by this. I love these sort of hanging firemen banners, too. Mm-hmm. I want one of those, man. I wonder if they have, like, were those created just for this? Because that would be awesome.
I think they were. I don't think you can just go to a store and buy those.
I don't know. Well, anyways. Okay, so there's I'm going to talk about it now. So we see Garfield Lines, the burnt man, who, this is one of my huge pet peeves. Like, he does not look like he got burned in a fire and was unrecognizable. And it just really... is a thing that bothers me in all mainstream television, because they do it all the time. He's a good-looking actor that they put makeup on to make him look like he was burnt, sort of on one side of his face. Like, it's not, it's, and I know it's such a small thing that it's like, okay, well, it works because he's on camera and he can't be too, I guess, I don't know what, burned, but it bothers me. Like, why not? There's also other things, too, when they won't let women be bald. It really bothers me. Like, there was something, I can't even remember what it was a while ago, but I was having a conversation with somebody about how in the show, they were supposed to be bald and they wouldn't let them stay bald for a long time because it just maybe wasn't aesthetically pleasing. And because, like, we have a certain standard of what we need to watch when we're watching television.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'll stop tangenting on this. But
no,
it just,
no.
Like,
I think this is relevant because really all we're getting right now is an action sequence where everything's on fire.
Yeah.
Oliver's going to turn into the Arrow.
And,
he's going to go down into the Batcave.
Yeah.
Bruce Wayne style and switch his costume.
I will say Tommy and Diggle stepping up here, getting everybody out.
Yeah, totally. But I think that you like you make a valid point, but I think you also have to remember that we're watching the CW.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's,
you know,
it,
if we were talking about AMC or HBO,
it would be
like let's talk about that. HBO Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
The Hound, similar situation, but is the Hound a particularly good-looking guy to begin with? No, because he's supposed to be intimidating and huge.
But, I mean,
and his burns are way more gruesome looking than the burns in this. The burns in this look very pulp comic-y.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they sort of have that, they glisten a lot and had that pattern.
Yeah.
So it was very, It was going for a more iconic sort of thing to give the character something rather than just, because this is, as far as I know, this isn't part of the comic character. In any of the incarnations that I've seen of Firefly, he's not horribly burned.
Right. So it could just be a, but, it's, anyways, so that's, and it's, it's one of those things where it's like, what do you lose watching it? I don't know. I guess that they have to have this scene where it's two actors talking on screen, I guess, which is a little, now that I'm watching it, it's really just two over the shoulder shots of this guy talking about how he was in a coma for months, which might not be the most interesting. But anyways, I just don't, like, I think they could have done some really interesting and edgy things with this, and I think they missed an opportunity to
show I don't think that's what the show
is trying to do. I don't sympathize with this character. He sets himself on fire because he doesn't want to live deformed.
I don't think we're already supposed to sympathize with him, though.
Well,
not all villains need to be sympathized with, because that, if you do that, it takes away the impact of the villains who truly are sympathetic. Nobody sympathizes with the Joker.
No, actually,
and that's one of the things that makes the Joker
interesting. Sympathy is the wrong word, then, that I chose, and I apologize. It's that I don't understand his stakes. That's what it is. It's that I don't understand this character's stakes. Mind you, I mean, this could be a really horrible conversation for people that have actually understand what it's like to be burned, because I don't. So, I don't know.
I think what we're going for here is an idea of he went into that building one man and then woke up from a coma as a different person. Right. And I think one of the parallels that we're supposed to be getting with Oliver is that he came to the island one person. It's a trial by fire, right? Like, that's the whole thing. And, like, trial by fire is how he gets back to being the Arrow when he shoots the lighter, as we just saw.
Yeah.
That's it's his really moment of, like, oh, he's back. Right? So it's the whole trial by fire thing. And that's the parallel to the island, where fighting with that guy, taking a life,
it's the thing that, I guess,
that's the thing that transforms him for the first time. So this, like, really, Firefly was just a catalyst to get the story across for Oliver.
It was the dental records. Maybe that's the thing that really bothered me, where they're like, some people couldn't be identified even their dental records. And it's like, no, they could have identified this guy.
His teeth looked really good,
his
actually.
His teeth looked really good, really, and he had a lovely smile and lovely eyes. He was a very good-looking actor.
But I think, like, the important part here is that that's not what they wanted.
Right.
That's not the episode that they were trying to build. Mm-hmm. There was no...
It's really all about Oliver and...
Yeah, like yes, you're right. They could have gone edgier. They could have had it very creepy. But they could have never really shown his face until the very end.
Yeah.
But it wasn't about Firefly. He's not meant to be a recurring villain, obviously. There's nothing to set up, because there wouldn't be a payoff.
Yeah. And I, like, this is the first time that Ollie got called a hero. We just saw earlier on the where you're really starting to get this dynamic, and where there might be people out there, and he needs to look at himself differently, and he was smiling, which is good. Anyways, and now Moira, like that, off to work.
Also, you know, a transformation.
Yeah. Oh, so, maybe. See, that's our, is that our three levels today?
I think
we've
so.
We've got the three, the...
I think, you know what? I think here's the problem. Trial by fire. The title of the episode was misleading.
Yeah.
And maybe, burned, I don't know, really meant anything thematically. I think it was just an easy title.
Well, he said, I've already been burned, and I think he meant he's been burned by others. Like, maybe hurt. Isn't that... I don't know, like, burn.
Yeah, but that doesn't really, but that really doesn't have anything to do with Oliver's storyline. It doesn't really have anything to do with
Moira's.
I think what we're looking at is those two characters. Their parallel is that they've both been through what they're going through
right
now.
Right.
And it was remembering what that was, and going through that transformation again.
Yeah.
In order to get back to where they were.
Yeah.
But this time, here's the thing: doing it by themselves.
Yeah,
because previously, I think Oliver did it with assistance, maybe not necessarily with Yao Fei there pushing him, but you know,
he had someone. Yeah, he had something.
There was a catalyst there. Mm-hmm. Whereas this time, he had to do it. Well, maybe not on his own, because Dick was there, so maybe that falls apart a little.
But I mean, he has to make the choice himself, right? Like, it's him when he's at... when he's in the building, it's the fact that he chooses to go back downstairs, get out his costume, and come back
up. It's not about survival.
It's not about survival. It's about doing what he's supposed to do. And so we're losing Laurel's friend for a while. Oh, Laurel's wearing red pants. Sorry.
She wears a lot of black.
Yeah, she does wear.
She wears black all the time.
She does. They make her wear black, which is sort of telling.
Yes.
But anyways, so we're losing the friend here. And this is kind of nice, just like that moment between the friend and her dad.
Yeah.
It's just like interesting, like real characters coming in and out of scenes, which is nice. Like this transition was genuine.
Yeah.
Which is nice. I'm really loving the writing. The more that we talk about it, and the more that we observe the show, I think that they really have sort of a good understanding and grasp of how the characters can be used and moved in and out. So, anyways, very interesting. Dad comes in being like, "I'm your dad. I know better. You didn't lose that phone. You have it on you." And again, this face is really light, right? There's something about him that's different than we've seen him in other places. Again, Paul Blackthorne getting at those layers as an actor.
Because it's a trap.
It's a trap.
Because he's putting it on right now.
Yeah. It's brilliant. Like,
because there it is, and beep, beep, he does something to the phone.
And gives it back to her. Like, it's, I don't know, it's brilliant.
You know, we were watching the episode the first time, and I went, I was like, that doesn't seem right.
That
seems really out of character for him.
And
then it was like, no sooner did I say it than the thought occurred to me, like, wait a second, he's up to something. And then in a second, we get the reveal that he was actually
using his daughter as bait.
Yeah.
Which, you, again, I think is telling of this episode being an episode where Laurel stepped very much up on her own as a character, and you get this idea that they're setting them up to be foes more so than they have previously. Like, while they're still family and they're still obviously all of those connections, there is a clear disparity between how they both see the vigilante and how they both go about doing that. And this is very interesting and made me sort of, he says it, it's stone cold, and he gets that moment where he's like, he gets it. And
I expected him to get angry at saying that.
Yeah, but
at the guy saying that to him. But then it's like, no, he knows what the cost
is.
He's
doing.
Yeah.
But I also think that he couldn't do that without trusting in some way.
Yeah.
Arrow. Like, I think that there's something there where he recognizes that he's not actually a bad guy, but to do his job, because he does his job really well, this is what he needs to do. So. Yeah. Anyways, and we have Arrow. Oh, yeah, you're right. He's changed his costume for the first time on the island, and he's wearing this Black Ops suit or whatever it is. And the map of that giant island. I didn't realize how big the island was either. So, it's kind of interesting. I'm excited for this story now. I really want to know what's happening on the island. I'm just as interested for that narrative next week, I think, as I am the general episode. And this part, I love this, when Ollie's going to get down off of here. So, Stephen Amell, we haven't had a lot of Stephen Amell love this episode, but look at that, where he just, like, seamlessly, beautifully gets down off of that, like, bar.
Yeah.
But I love him, and he's so great, and he started his blog up again, and he's using Facebook amazingly, and he
and
just,
YouTube.
Like, and YouTube, and I just want to, like, every episode I feel like I need to give him props for being...
And everybody, go on all of his different social media things and tell him that he needs to come on Quiver and talk about all of his
stuff. How awesome he is.
Yeah.
And his social media, because that's what he does. He really is all about reaching out. And I just want to say how atrocious it is that so many people actually are, like, responding to him. Within 6 minutes, he'll have something like 900 comments and 43 shares. It's absurd. But in a great way. I don't know. Anyways, kudos to Stephen Amell for doing so well and for still staying true to his fans and being really relevant. His blog is called Prelude to a Big Break. And I think it's just really interesting because one of the first things he said was, does this blog name still make sense? Because he has had this big break, right? But it's just interesting to recognize that he recognizes that he was an actor at one point, really just sort of doing what he does and trying to make an impact. And now he has. And it's exciting. And I mean, this show... obviously not going anywhere for a while, so...
No. Yeah. I think we can look forward to... I mean, we already know that... I think... have we heard we could in a second season?
Yeah. I don't know about second season.
We have the
expansion. They probably won't... They won't announce all that stuff until February. February is usually when they announce everything. Because they pilots... it's just going...
CW tends to renew stuff really early, though. They do stuff really soon.
I'm just going to say it. If Nikita can get renewed, so can... sorry to Nikita fans. My apologies.
I'm not going to apologize. I don't understand what people say in that show. I really don't get it. But, I mean, other than chicks in skin-tight outfits fighting, that's what every preview looks like. It doesn't look like the show really has anything going on other than a bunch of female protagonist and antagonist constantly fighting.
Which
one another,
I guess which kudos, in and of itself kudos for that. I don't know.
Yeah, but it's, in and of itself isn't good enough. Like, strong female characters are important, but I'd much rather have the strong female characters that we've had so far on Arrow.
Yeah.
Like, this is the thing. Let's go on a bit of a tangent because the episode's over, and so I just want to take an opportunity and talk about this a little bit. Feminism for feminism, feminism's sake.
Oh, are you really going to talk about this right now? Okay.
I am. Okay. I don't think is like I think it's too far to the other end of the spectrum because I'm going to use Arrow as an example of a show that manages to have strong female characters in Laurel, in Moira maybe not so much, Thea not so much, but in Huntress, in those two episodes, very interesting arc for that character. I mean, we've had all sorts of...
Thea's holding her own.
Thea
as
is.
Much as she's annoying, she's
I wouldn't... But see, like, I wouldn't say... She's not, like, a shining example.
Yeah.
But she is a realistically written female character.
Yeah.
She's not... although she has her issues are relatable and understandable.
Mm-hmm.
They're not absurd. Like she's not some little spoiled rich girl who's just out partying and doing drugs and drinking. There was a little bit of that at the beginning of the season, but it was within the context of my family is in shambles.
Broken and I'm a little broken.
And she's come out of it since Oliver's been home and said, you need to get your head on straight.
Yeah. So,
and,
I mean, again,
and
it's
I think, like,
all
that,
over the place,
that interaction, if we take away the sexism either way, of male or female weighted, you can say that's just family relationships of a brother, of just a sibling, let's say.
Yeah.
Let's, like, get rid of the genders entirely. A sibling coming back from something and saying to another sibling, your head's not in it. Get it together, and having that older sibling, younger sibling story happen without us really needing to care. It's not that it's not that he's protecting her because like I don't
do this a lot. I'm gonna wrangle it in. I feel like we're really tangenting right now in a place that's not maybe
no,
useful.
See,
it's
no,
not
that's not fair.
Okay,
no,
all right.
You don't like it because you don't like. That I'm going to go into a controversial place with
you're
this.
You're not going to a controversial place. I want to know what you're going to. Can you just get to the point of what you're
no,
talking
this
about?
Is my point,
okay.
Is that it's doing having a show where your leads are female, simply to say, we have female leads, I think is just as detrimental as having an airheaded female character on your show.
Yes.
It's much more important to be balanced than it is to be feminist or masculine.
Right. So the only reason that I'm saying this is because neither of us have watched Nikita. So we can't actually talk about it from a place that's
I've never watched a full episode, but I have watched some of it.
I've watched a full episode, at least.
Okay.
I've got you on that.
I've
watched
a lot
about
it. And from the commercials, all I can tell is that it's a bunch of skin-tight clad women fighting each other constantly. And, you know, like, if that's all you have to show me in your commercials, then, you know, like, I think Arrow is doing a really good job of having female characters on it that are not sexualized.
That's, actually, they're sexualizing the men a lot more than they're sexualizing. And
Stephen
Amell is taking it. Like, he's the most sexually objectified person on television this year.
Yes.
Like, I think, honestly, the fact that People Magazine can have a poll saying Stephen Amell's abs as one of the top 25 most important things in the fall season is a big... I think that's really interesting.
I'm actually interested
that we're having this conversation.
That's why
now.
I think
like,
that
I like
it's, a, yeah, it's
an
important,
a relevant conversation.
It's an important thing to talk about because Arrow is a show that I think is a bit of a shift in... Definitely in the CW's programming.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've been watching the CW since it was the WB.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And UPN, respectively.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, we've brought up Buffy before, and I think that Buffy and a lot of Joss Whedon's work and Terminator, Sarah Connor Chronicles,
oh God, I love that show.
And Fringe, and a lot of shows on TV, a lot of genre shows, because your genre...
You get to... Yeah.
You can... They have this leeway where they can start to make the characters... they can do different things. They can take risks.
Yeah.
And the CW has a lot of shows... Mm-hmm. that do that, but it also has a lot of shows that don't do that. Yeah. I mean, 90210 is a really bad example it's a great example of gender exploitation on both ends of the spectrum,
right.
But especially the girls.
Right.
I mean, those girls, particularly when they were younger, when they were supposed to be in like their second or third year of high school, they were way too sexualized, and it was like, as an adult watching it,
that's what the show is for.
Absolutely, but it made me uncomfortable as an adult. Man
watching the show. Well, which is, I think, why we're also drawn to genre, right?
Yes.
The reason we don't watch genre television for, I mean, stereotypes as much as, like, the entertainment factor in genre television is much different, and we're invested in it for very different reasons than some mainstream entertainment, which is why I like the fact that Arrow can find a comfortable place on a Wednesday evening slot on a CW network and reach a big audience and that people are enjoyed and entertained by the show for things other than just how it's like popcorn television. Well, it's still popcorn television.
Absolutely.
It's in a way that it has a bit more leniency to be there. And I just want to point out Felicity's actually a good they're doing some interesting things with her on the show too. I kind of like her as a character.
Yeah, well, Felicity's
female,
smart,
right? And being really smart and things like that. So
Yay
Arrow is basically how,
well, just,
how
you know
goes.
Like, you know, Arrow is probably the best example right now of a show that I don't think has a gender bias. If it does, it is sort of skewing a little bit more towards the ladies, in terms of showing them what they want to see.
Yeah.
I think we talked about it a little bit earlier when Diggle had his shirt off,
and
that's because for a guy, I'm already in. Like, you got me hook, line, and sinker. It's a show about Green Arrow, and Deathstroke was mentioned, like visually nodded to in the first episode.
So,
but for the girls, sometimes they, you know, girlfriends, let's say, just to generalize, need the nudge to watch a show like this with their boyfriends.
I want to point out, me and Mike are both actually highly educated, and we're talking very stereotypically on this particular podcast.
Yeah.
I just want there's more to this, but we're talking in stereotypes right now.
Generalizations,
and we recognize that, but any feedback is fine. I just wanted to point that out, but yes, so we're talking generalizations, but generally.
But there's a lot of really great genre television that really doesn't draw a distinction between what their male characters and what their female characters are capable of.
Yeah.
Fringe, which is just wrapping up.
Last episode
is this Friday, tomorrow night, two-hour finale, which I can't wait to watch.
Yeah.
If you haven't watched Fringe, I'm pretty sure it's on Netflix now in Canada and the States.
The first four seasons are,
watch it because it's awesome.
Oh, it's brilliant.
Not just Olivia on that show, who was the main character,
Astrid
as well. Like, they're both, it really doesn't matter that they're female, but at the same time, they have moments that are female, right? So it's one of those things where this is kind of my point, that sometimes a show will take women, add them into it, but then go, oh yeah, but it's a girl that can kick butt, and so now all of a sudden it's really not, like, that character is not female, that character is a guy with boobs, right? So I don't know, like, Arrow is a great example of a show that does that well, and Fringe is another example. So
it's good.
So we'll wrap it up there.
We will. Yeah. I see Crystal's almost coming home. I think she's waiting for us to finish the podcast, which is good. So, wrapping up, I mean, we're excited. Some really interesting things coming down the pipe for Arrow.
Yes.
So, spoilers for the next 1 minute. We do have, I'm really excited, February, I'm excited for Roy Harper.
Yes.
To come on the show.
Roy Harper, for those who don't know, was
exciting.
I believe
Red Arrow.
I'm just trying to remember my Roy Harper was the original Speedy. Green Arrow's son, who became Speedy later, but his first sidekick, who eventually becomes Red Arrow.
Right.
If you were to read the comics now, he'd be Red. Actually, I don't think he's Red Arrow anymore. I think he's now something else.
But he's the Justice League or whatever.
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
There was a previous run of Justice League, not the current one, because the New 52 has kind of screwed everything up.
Yeah.
But the previous run, he became Red Arrow.
Yeah.
And was one of the main members of the Justice League. So,
I'm really excited about that. Same director of this episode. Yeah. And that's not until February, so in between there, we've got a couple other things. Again, if you watch Fringe, Seth Gable is going to be on upcoming episode.
He's coming up as Count Vertigo.
Very exciting.
Ben Browder is on next week's episode, who is from Farscape, for those who watch Farscape, and also Stargate.
Yay, genre represent! Yes. And it's really exciting, and some really good things. And again, kudos to the writers. Awesome show. And again, let us know what you think of our podcast and of Arrow in general. We love talking with you. We appreciate you listening to us talk to ourselves for an hour and a half. So,
if you want to get in contact with us, you can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/quiverpodcast. You can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/quiverpodcast.
Really? It's at quiverpodcast, though.
If you want to find the URL.
Right, yes.
You can also mail us, mail@quiverpodcast.com, and you can check out our website at quiverpodcast.com.
Yay. So, well, thanks for listening, and we will see you actually next week this time. It won't be that long until next time. So, yay. Have a good evening.
People aren't necessarily listening to this in the evening.
You know what?
Just because it's the evening for us.
Have a good whatever time of day it is. See you next time. Bye.
Nice toque.
Oh, I love your toque. It's an owl. You came at a really good time.
This won't be on the episode.
He says that now.
And if it is, it's okay because Amanda mentioned that Laurel's toque.
I did.
In the episode. Yeah, so it could just be
about...
connection.
Yeah.
Your owl tube and Laurel's blue tube. Why? What is that face? We're done. We're all done.
God, that was a long episode. I feel like